Good afternoon. With KUOW's The Record, I'm Bill Radke. On a hot summer night in 2009, three people's lives changed forever in Seattle's South Park neighborhood. One woman died, another survived a brutal attack. A young man is now spending his life in prison.
This book is about the three lives that intersected that night. So the life of Teresa Butts, the life of Jennifer Hopper, and the life of their attacker, Isaiah Kalebu, and what those lives and paths have to teach.
That's Pulitzer Prize winner Eli Sanders. He tells their story in his new book, While the City Slept. We started our conversation with that July night.
Two women, Teresa Butts and Jennifer Hopper, were living together in a small red house, planning to be married at the end of the summer. And in the middle of the summer, a man named Isaiah Kalebu crawled in through a window of their home and attacked both of them, raped both of them, attempted to kill both of them, and succeeded after some fighting back by Teresa in killing Teresa, and attempted to kill Jennifer, who was able to escape into the street in front of her house.
You get a sense in your book about how she has forgiven Isaiah Kalebu, and you get a sense even in her testimony about some kind of, unbelievably, a kind of humanity in that room that night.
An incredible grace. I think, on the part of both Teresa Butts and Jennifer Hopper. And yes, humanity towards someone who was doing really unspeakable things to them. There was a moment when Isaiah, during the crime, he attacked them multiple times, and between attacks, they had conversations sometimes, and Jennifer and Teresa were trying to prevail on him to go. And one of these conversations went in the direction of Isaiah asking at one point whether they might have been friends, because he started to see from what they were saying that they were very good people. They were on the board of a homeless advocacy organization. And Teresa's response was, maybe we still could be. And he asked her whether she thought there was any good in him. And this is after he had done terrible things to her and to her fiance, Jennifer. And she put her hand on his chest, in Jennifer's telling of this at the trial during Jennifer's testimony. She described Teresa putting her hand on Isaiah's chest and saying, I know there's some good in there somewhere.
Did Jennifer want us to know Isaiah's story as well?
I don't know whether at the time that she testified in 2011, she did, or she ever envisioned, or I ever envisioned, for that matter, a book like this. But over the course of working on the book and over the course of her work over these years since the crime and since the trial, she has become interested in his path. She has found forgiveness for him and a forgiveness that helps her to be whole, and a curiosity, as she puts it in the book, what happened to him? How could somebody become someone who would do something like this?
How did our system fail Isaiah Kalebu?
In the years when Isaiah most needed help and intervention from our publicly funded mental health system, that system was under incredible strain because of budget cuts enacted in the wake of the Great Recession. When state lawmakers needed to shave money off the state budget, they slashed social services first. And so in the year that this crime occurred, a $24 million cut, for example, was taking effect in the state mental health services budget. And there are consequences to those decisions. And you can see in Isaiah's path through our mental health system that he was not watched as closely as he should have been, for example. There's a point where he ended up free on certain conditions from a judge, one of them being that he attend his community treatment appointments. Now, he was going to community treatment because he's not a person of great means at a publicly funded community treatment center. These places are overworked, underpaid, overwhelmed. And when he stopped showing up, the center didn't communicate with the judge to tell him that they hadn't seen him in a while. And the judge, who is also in a system that is underfunded, overwhelmed, didn't communicate with the community treatment center. And so months went by where Isaiah was not seen at a time when psychiatrists who had evaluated him had warned that he really needed to be regularly seen or else he would be a danger.
And in that way, this book is not just about Jennifer, Teresa, and Isaiah. It's about our mental health system.
Which means it's about us, because we elect the people who make the decisions about how to fund or how to reform our mental health system. But the context is underfunded, overwhelmed systems that don't have time to be in constant communication with each other about an individual who really needs constant care.
The surviving victim of this crime, Jennifer Hopper, she lives here. You've spent a lot of time with her, spent a lot of time going over that horrible night. What is it like for you to try to tell such an unspeakable story, but speak about it for years now for you?
It's not been easy. I want to clarify that the book is not, you know, a book-length version of that night. It really, the vast majority of it is the path toward that night, the path taken by Isaiah Kalebu and Jennifer Hopper and Teresa Butts, and then the paths onward. But it was not easy to even sit just with those paths, knowing the outcome. And one of the tools I used, and I don't know if this was a good tool, but it's what helped get me through. You know, I saw every day in my work people who were living with the consequences of this crime in far more profound ways than I was. Jennifer, her forgiveness for Isaiah, Isaiah's family, their ability to go on despite the real difficult challenges they had long before this crime occurred, and, you know, their incredible pain at not having been able to get their son more help or prevail on other people to help him. And to see and know that they were going on, and the family of Teresa Butts was going on and doing remarkable, purposeful things. Teresa's family and Jennifer Hopper have created something called the Angel Band Project, which is dedicated to helping survivors of sexual violence through music therapy. They were putting on concerts at the time that I was working on this book. They still are. And so you see that and you think, okay, I'm having a bad day, you know, or whatever. This is a hard day, but you know what? They've got bad days, and look at what they're doing. They're making something good out of this. Hopefully I can make something worthwhile out of these stories.
That's Stranger Associate Editor Eli Sanders, the author of While the City Slept. Jennifer Hopper survived the night Isaiah Kalebu attacked her and her fiancé, and as Eli Sanders just said, she has managed to make something good out of the events of that night. But now a lot of people only know Jennifer as the person who survived that attack. KUOW's Katie Sewell asked Jennifer Hopper what it's like to be forever associated with that terrible night and how people treat her differently now.
That's a great question. I'm going to answer it by telling you my favorite quote by John Irving, The Cider House Rules, and it's been my favorite quote for probably 15 years. Sometimes when we are labeled, when we are branded, our brand becomes our calling. And at the time, I never knew that that would have anything to do with my life. Probably way before Eli branded me as the bravest woman in Seattle, without a doubt, people had that to say. It was like, you're so strong, you're so brave around such a bad thing that happened. And I'm not going to say that that's not true. I do own that my response to what happened to Teresa and what happened to me has been strong and as graceful as I can be, and maybe even brave. But it's really interesting when you start getting known for that. it really does become like a beacon for how to be and how to behave in the world. I actually have a higher calling for myself. You know, I really want to be counted on for being all of those things that people say that I am. You're meeting someone who has also survived something terrible, not just like sexual violence, maybe their own death of a partner or of a child or of someone dear to them. And there's this, like, you can know me. It's like this invitation. Those, in many ways, are my favorite moments, because it's not that often that with relative strangers, you get to have unspoken intimacy.
How do you feel about Isaiah now?
First of all, I love that you used his first name, because that's a commitment that I have. For a long time, I called him Kalebu. I knew I was doing it because there was something scary about his first name. The way I think about him, I am glad that he is in prison and isn't free to feasibly hurt anyone else. I know that when I read the book, there was a passage in which it became clear to me that one of the things that has been taken from him by being in prison, and this had never occurred to me before as possible, he will probably never experience love in his life. Like, he won't be allowed to. And when I knew that, I felt sad. And it was another example in which I knew that whatever forgiveness has cultivated over the last 6 years is real and true and not just something I made up. I'm always worried it's going to just be something that I'm making up to feel better. But I knew it was true because I thought, that's sad. He will never have that experience. And maybe that's part of what prison is. I hope that he finds some sense of peace and routine and health.
The book, you know, is about three people colliding. And let's say that collision was going to happen regardless. Does that ever make you wish that you had not met Teresa?
In the aftermath of everything that's happened, of course I've been somebody who's looked at faith and questioned my beliefs and wondered, was I naive to think that if we're good people, good things will happen to us and all of that? And I don't have good answers for all of that yet, but I can't help but believe that we're all here for a reason. If what happened to her had to happen, that I was here to hold her hand through it, and I would do it over and over and over again. And while it hurts, it has made me a better person.
Jennifer Hopper, one of the subjects of Eli Sanders' new book, While the City Slept, that looks at the lives of Hopper and Teresa Butts and Isaiah Kalebu. Kalebu attacked Jennifer and Teresa in their home in 2009, killing Teresa, nearly killing Jennifer Hopper. And you can hear from Jennifer and the author of that book, Eli Sanders, when they're interviewed on stage on Wednesday night by KUOW's Marcy Silman at Town Hall Seattle. Again, that's this Wednesday night at 7:30 right here on KUOW Seattle.